Hi, Barb.
And Bart and Bruce just took on the call. Bart and Bruce from Boston.
Welcome back, Bart. Okay. All right. So this is the 9/11 Truth Teleconference for August the 26th, 2015. It's really facilitating. Great. We're going to call it all. Good luck.
Sure. I just wanted to double check again because just when that last name was being spelled for me, two other people joined in and it kind of wiped out what I was hearing. So could you say that one more time for me?
My name is M-C-K-E-R-T-I-C-H.
M-C-K-E-R...
Stephen Thomas. I-C-H.
God, I really hate to do this to you, but I'm really having trouble hearing you. Just go slowly one more time. And
McCurkish.
McCurkish. So it ends with...
M-C-K-E-R-T-I-C-H? E-R-T-I-C-H, correct.
Okay.
Is he on speakerphone?
I am.
Yeah.
It's hard to hear you.
That's why I'm struggling.
And it's cutting out over here, too.
Yeah. Just to let everybody know, if your phone is creating any kind of noise, if there's any noise in the background, if you press star 6, it will mute your phone, and then you can press star 6 when you need to speak. So just so everybody's aware of that. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'll read the names I've got. Should I go ahead?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have McCurkish, the one we just did, Mark. I hope I got that right. Then we have Ken Freeland, David Schlesinger, Cheryl Curtis, Ned Delaney, Paul Zaremka, Craig McKee, Greg Longo, Rich O'Coin, Pat McGuire, Nita Renfrew, Jack Graham, Dan Hennen, Sue Serpa, Frank Tolopko, James Hufford, Barbara Honegger, and Barton Bruce.
Did I get everybody? Lynn Bradbury you didn't get.
Lynn Bradbury, okay.
Doing
in. Lucas in Boston.
Sorry. Who in Boston?
MC Lucas.
Somebody's phone is making a whole lot of noise. If you think it might be your phone, if you're using speakerphone, please press star 6, and that will give us all the ability to hear until you're ready to speak. Star 6, yeah, and we just need it temporarily until you're ready to speak. Star 6.
And what do you push when you want to speak?
Star 6. It's the same
thing. Oh, the same
thing. Oh, man, this is bad. I think what I'm going to have to do is all the phones that are unmuted right now, I'm going to have to mute them one at a time until we figure out where the noise is coming from. So if you hear somebody saying your phone's muted, it'll be temporary until I can figure this out. All right. Please continue, Frank.
Okay. So I got Lynn Bradbury. I got Lucas, but I didn't get the first name.
Meg Luke.
I can't hear you at all. Meg, thank you.
Maybe Meg. I don't know.
Oh, is it Meg? Whoever's spelling their name has to do it very, like, slowly and very clearly because the sound is bad. So.
It's Susan Mick Lucas.
L-U-C-A-S. Susan, got it. Okay, thank you so much. Your patience.
And that's all
I have.
I'm going to jump in here, Craig, because Barry Zwicker in Toronto is
me
here.
Okay, great. Hi, Barry.
Although I signed on 3 minutes before 8, I was the first one.
Oh, boy. Did I also hear Dwayne Dietz?
Yes.
In the background?
Yes.
Okay. So this is officially the biggest call I've ever been on, that's for sure. Did anybody not hear their name when I read the list?
Okay, excuse me for interrupting, Craig. I think I've discovered who's blinded. It's just making the noise. It's whoever has a 781 number. So I'm going to have to ask you to please mute your phone by pressing star 6 and leave it muted until you need to speak, okay?
Here's the problem. This is Rich O'Coin. It's me. So I don't know if you can hear me well, but I have a problem with my phone where I can't push *6 right now, but I will be able to quiet down in about a minute or two. So I think it's going to resolve itself if you guys can just hang in there.
Who's speaking right now?
Rich O'Coin.
Rich, okay, I'm
going to
mute your phone for you, Rich.
Yes,
please do.
All right. Whew.
All right.
Please
continue.
Okay? That's better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That is much
better.
A lot better.
Yeah.
So, do I need to read it again, or are we good?
Has everybody heard their name mentioned by Craig at this point? Is anybody he's missed? That's when I think we're ready to proceed. And
all right.
That will bring us to the... Oh, I'm sorry. So the first thing is to approve the agenda from or the minutes from the previous meeting. Any objections to the minutes circulated? Hearing none, we'll take the minutes for approved. And the agenda for tonight has been circulated in draft form. We have three basic items on the agenda. Did anybody need to add or question anything on the agenda? Okay, hearing nothing, then we'll proceed with our draft agenda. And our first item, is Ned Delaney on the call? Ned Delaney.
I thought I heard somebody, Delaney.
He was earlier.
Okay, Ned, star six.
Yes, he's here. I had my phone muted.
Oh, okay, good. All right, I'm going to make sure. Thank you, because we need you to speak in a second here. Our guest of honor tonight is Jack Graham, and to introduce him, the guy who did the footwork. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It wasn't Ned. It was Joe Balter. But Joe said he couldn't be on the call. I'm sorry. Ned, you were supposed to introduce Kevin. So I'll just summarize very quickly what I know about Jack. You know, everybody knows, that, or should by now from reading our draft, that the agenda, that Jack was involved with the 9/11 truth in preparing a request of the VA in New York, in Manhattan, for a grand jury investigation of 9/11. This, you know, didn't transpire, but it was a good effort, supported by everyone in the truth movement, and that's how he got his name in the truth movement. But now he's involved with the Charnock trial indirectly through an association with his aunt and his students. And that's what he'll be speaking to us tonight about, updating us on the trial, what's going on with that, and opening himself, hopefully, for some questions from us, those of us who are a little murky on what's going on, and thanks for the mainstream coverage and a little bit in the dark. Jack, thank you, and welcome very much to our teleconference.
I'm very honored to be here. So, what do you want me to say something now?
Yes, you can summarize the certain, what's going on right now in your,
all right.
You should be aware of with the Charnock trial and in your relationship to it, and,
Okay, so here's where we are at the moment. I think everybody here has read Craig Roberts' report about Merit Saraneva's intervention. It says FBI evidence proves innocence of the accused in the Boston bombing case. If you have read that, and you read all the contributions of Craig's commentary, Merritt's affidavit, Merritt's argument, which I wrote, of course, and helped and filed for her, together with certain other documents, I can send a full set to anyone. And I have the original documents in my file, including the signatures, the original signatures of Merit Saraneva in Russian script, and then my commentary. Transferring some of these papers, the most important ones, to Craig Roberts, this was done because there's a lot of noise out on the internet about the anomalies of the case, And of course, the white and black back sack anomaly is fairly well known, but it's just out there on the internet. There are a lot of other anomalies, including those that are mentioned by some very eminent people, like Dr. Lorraine Day and some of the others. Jim Fetzer is another big name that many of you have heard. Jim Fetzer was a Marine officer. He's a retired professor of philosophy at the University of Minnesota Duluth, where he specialized in philosophy of science. I've known Jim for some years, and I called him because when I started to look at this case, I could see that the anomaly of the white back black sack problem was so obvious that I thought I must have been missing something. And I couldn't believe that an anomaly this obvious. Here are the projections of the FBI say that the culprits are carrying large, heavy black back sacks. The indictment confirms that projection, and then you have the third still frame from the Whiskey Steakhouse video used by the FBI to identify the suspect, and this shows that Zokar is carrying over his right shoulder a small, flat, lightweight white back sack. So that excludes him, and yet it was never emphasized. How in the world could Judy Clark say in her opening statement that her client was guilty, as she did in very emphatic terms, as I think most of you know, if she had powerful exculpatory evidence like this? This is a defense lawyer's dream. This doesn't happen in the practice of law. I have been a public prosecutor and I've been a public defender, and this just doesn't happen in the practice of criminal law. You wouldn't have a major case going forward against someone under these circumstances. And indeed, the white back sack vitiates probable cause. The prosecutors cannot ethically proceed. And it also gives counsel for the accused an open and shut defense, which they should be able to assert by way of pretrial motion to dismiss the indictment. How is it that we were even going to trial? Much less, were we going to trial and on the first day the counsel for the accused makes a florid statement about how Zokar detonated a bomb and killed people and that they agreed with the government. What was going on? This just doesn't make any sense. There are cases where you may have evidence that's overwhelming and removes all doubt of the guilt of the accused, and sometimes a good defense lawyer in that situation will admit guilt and then plead to the mercy of the court. But here she had this very powerful circumstantial evidence. It's unanswerable. Why was she making a florid admission that her client was guilty? So I called up Jim Fetzer, who had written quite a bit about this, and I said, "Jim, am I missing something? I've got to have it. I got to know." And Jim said, no, and I talked to another fellow by the name of Dick Eastman, who had also done a lot of work on this. He's from Yakima, Washington, has two master's degrees, very bright fellow, and he made clear that, no, we're not missing any. And but the thing that cinches this is that the FBI's is using the Whiskey Steakhouse video to identify the culprits and actually make wanted posters from the video to solicit public assistance with public peace officers in trying to solve this crime and criminal investigators. But this very video contains the still frame that shows that Zokar was carrying a white backpack. Interestingly, I got my first copy of that still frame on the CNN website. So the major news media knew about it, too. The prosecutors knew about it, and it's impossible that counsel for the accused had not known about it. In fact, that material has to be handed over, and was handed over, by the prosecutors to Judy Clark. So the whole thing, she had a cinch defense. And yet this case is going forward as if, and I look at the news media, and they're trying to create the impression or suggestion that the evidence is overwhelming, leaving no doubt, and that heroic Judy Clark is defending an impossible case, and she's something like Joan of Arc or something like that, some heroine character, and she's not using the evidence that can sink the government's battle wagon. So it must mean that she isn't, if you just assume that an intelligent adult intends the natural and foreseeable consequences of her own acts, she must be faking this defense. Likewise, it's impossible that the defense, the prosecutors didn't know about it. They were the ones that wrote up the indictment, which in paragraph 7 mentions black backpacks. And one of their exhibits, number 22, has tucked into it the Swiskey Steakhouse video showing that Zokar is carrying a white backpack. So they must have known about it. The purpose here was to file a petition by Merit Tsarnaeva. She's a Russian aunt of Zokar, and she's a lawyer. She was trained in the old Russian school in the Tsarist Republic, which was once part of the Russian Empire and has since been independent since the end of the Cold War. In any event, there we are, this very strange situation, and Merritt asked to be granted leave to appear as a friend of the court. That's very rare in criminal prosecutions that someone can be admitted as a friend of the court, but it has happened, and there are cases on it. And one of the grounds where this can be done is if the intervener was a friend of the person seeking to be a friend of the court, shows the court that the accused is not being properly defended. This is exactly what Merritt did, if you read her pro se argument that I happen to have written, but I mean, and I'm listed as of counsel to signal to the court that she was being guided by an American lawyer. There it is, and the judge now had to look at this whole thing, including the exhibits attached to the submission, and he denied it, which wasn't such a surprise, except that he, at our request...
Excuse me, Jack, I'm going to need to interrupt you here. Two people just came on the call, and one of them seems to have causing some background noise here. I think it's, I'd like to ask the first two people who just came on the call to identify themselves. Okay, we've got kind of 857 number. I'm sorry? Who's on the call with the 857 number? Could you please identify yourself? We can't hear a thing. And there's a lot of background noise on the line. I'm going to have to mute you, and hopefully,
in your end,
yeah, I'm going to have to mute your line. I'm sorry. Okay, and who else just came on the call?
Oh, this is Betty Jennings.
Okay. No, Betty
Jennings.
All right. I'm sorry, Jack. Please continue. Okay, so what we had here, the purpose was to make a showing to the court on the record, which this is what's disappointing. It's now part of the record of the case. It's not on some website on the internet somewhere or some emails or whatever going back and forth. It's part of the official record of the case, so that neither the prosecutors nor counsel for the accused nor the presiding judge can claim they didn't know anything about it. Unless it's put on the record, they're in a position to say, well, look, we just pay attention to the record. We don't look at the rest of the world. So we put this on the record. We put, including the key exhibits, and the judge ordered the clerk's office to maintain these papers of record in the case. So we've accomplished that much. And our next objective is to go to the First Circuit when the appeal starts. It hasn't yet, but it will soon. And then we'd like to make a similar intervention before the U.S. Supreme Court. If it gets there, as it probably will. And then possibly, if there are post-conviction habeas corpus proceedings, say, claiming that Judy Clark was not defending her client according to the standards of Strickland versus Washington, it will be on the record that she knew or should have known what was going on here. The same is true with the judge, and the same is true with the prosecutor. They knew or they should have known what was going on. That's why we did this. And we're going to try it again before the First Circuit, and you never know when this start somebody might notice it and say, wait a minute, this is wrong, and the court might act sua sponte, that is, on its own motion, and intervene. And we're trying to get an order declaring a mistrial, as it were, and ordering a new trial and appointment of a lawyer that is really going to defend Zocar. Now, it's interesting that there are good lawyers in Massachusetts, but my paralegal assistant and I have been unable to find. We even went to the Minnesota or the Massachusetts American Civil Liberties Union. And I couldn't find somebody in the Massachusetts bar or the bar of the Federal District Court in Boston that would make a motion to have me admitted, what we say, pro hoc vici, that is, on special occasion.
Can I say
something? Yes. Not yet. No, not yet. We're trying to allow him to finish the presentation, then we'll do a stack, and people will have an opportunity to comment or ask questions. Okay?
All right. So there we are, and that's what we've been attempting to accomplish. And very fortunately, Craig Roberts picked up on this, because when he started to publish this, it got all over. It's probably on about 35 websites now. And it's all over the internet. People now are aware of not only the fact that Merritt has intervened, but that what she's saying is that there's something definitely wrong. And it has had the impact of raising public consciousness about this. A lot of people simply did not know. And to be perfectly honest, when I was looking into it, I couldn't believe it, what I was seeing. So I had to consult with others to determine whether I was off base or this really was as bad as it appeared to be. So it's the sort of thing that strikes people with disbelief. And so this is an exercise in trying to create a public record, the same as when you go to Vance's office and you ask him, why not call a grand jury to investigate the collapse of the Twin Towers in Building 7? You have a public record of this. They can't say, well, we didn't call it to the attention of public authorities. Very, very important to do that. And so that's what we're doing. Now what I'm in the process of doing is trying to find somebody who will help us with some fundraising. And if there's anybody here who can volunteer for that, I would be very grateful. By volunteer to help us approach certain people, we don't need to raise a lot of money. I mean, if we had 40 or 50,000, that would be plenty. Normally, these things, a case like this, we'd be talking about $500,000 or something. But this is something that we can, if we get a modest sum of money somewhere, like maybe even 20,000 or something like that. So we have a fund available to pay all expenses as and when they're earned. I found a lawyer in Massachusetts by the name of Jim Bagnell, who's in New Bedford. He's a good guy, and he's offered to help. Jim Bagnell would hold the trust account so that money would be available to pay for printing and electronic filing and motions for this and that, maybe a deposition, whatever. Just expenses of this kind as they come on. We need to have that. We're interested in raising a relatively small amount of money for a case of this kind, but we need somebody to do that because lawyers can't be doing that and the substantive work at the same time. So if anybody can help with that and just volunteer your services in that respect, my email, just send me an email and I'll be eternally grateful to you.
Would you like your email address to be in the minutes for this purpose?
Yes, I would.
Okay. You want to give
my
me that?
My email is jrgraham, as in crackers, jrgraham, at NoviComFusion, and that's, I'll spell it for you, one word, N as in Nancy, O, V as in Victor, I, C, O, M as in Mary, FUSION as in Nancy, .com. And if somebody could offer to help, one of the persons on my list, for example, is Dick Gregory. And we have to have somebody call up him and talk to him and give him, we've got links, you know. I think just the link of Craig Roberts' report is probably good enough as a solicitation device. We can send him that and then ask him if he can help us. And if we could get a few nice contributions like that, just because this is very, very important. This case, the reason why I became involved in the case is that I'm convinced that it's being used to generate another war in the Middle East or to generate public support for legislation that would facilitate the imposition of martial law. And I really think that the United States is in a very bad way right now, and I'm sure all of you feel that way too. Most people who are involved in the wake of 9/11, including the Boston Marathon case, and I think all of us understand that the two are linked, not to mention Sandy Hook and a number of others. Maybe even there's suspicious, very suspicious indications in the terrible case in Charleston. Might be another one of these things that we're
in where?
A lot of, What?
The terrible taste in where?
Charleston.
Okay.
There's something about that that doesn't smell right, but we don't have any evidence yet. It just doesn't hang together. And if you've seen a lot of these things and you're beginning to suspect, I have worked on just two, the New York phase of 9/11 and the Boston Marathon case, and the Boston Marathon case only the backsack issue. I haven't gotten into any of the other objections, such as you see Dr. Day or Dr. Fetzer, where he goes on and on and on laying out one anomaly after another, and I don't choose to have an opinion on each and every one of those anomalies. But I try to focus on a few things and do what I can. There are people. I say Jim Fetzer has a really good grasp of all this. He's much deeper than I have. But I'm sure the people in this group know a lot of things that I don't know.
Well, in response to that, since we're running to the limit of our time on this one, I was wondering if we could stop it here and then allow people to make comments or ask questions.
All right. Well, so I'm just making a pitch. If anybody can help me with fundraising, send me an email.
Okay.
That's it. Any questions?
Yeah. Okay. One more.
Barbara.
Before we go anywhere, I've got two people who have been muted that I need to check with to see if they can be unmuted. So let's give them an opportunity here. Rich O'Connor, are you back with us yet? Rich O'Connor, are you able to speak? Oh, well, you still got back on, right? Rich, I'm going to have to put you back on mute for the time being, I guess. All right, and this other person that came in here, I'm going to give you another chance to identify yourself. You're being unmuted. You're unmuted right now. Can you please identify yourself? Who are you? Who are you? I think I'm going to drop you from the call. If you'd like to call back, hopefully we can get a better connection for you. Okay. Okay, so, all right, so who would like to be on the staff to make a comment or ask a question regarding the Jack's presentation?
Greg.
Barbara, on the staff.
Greg.
Barbara, who else?
Craig.
Craig, who else?
Your page messenger.
Right, Paul. Paul, who else?
Page messenger.
Dave, who else?
Cat,
I'm sorry, Cat, who else?
Cat.
Who? Kat, I got you. Okay, I got Barbara, Craig, Paul, Dave, and Kat. Who else would like to be on the stack?
Ned,
who else? I'll put myself last. Okay, Barbara, go ahead. And please keep your comments very brief because we're short on time here.
Sure, yeah. I believe your name is Jack. Is that correct?
Yeah, John Remington Graham. I'm known as Jack to friends.
That's what I thought. Thank you. First off, thank you, Jack. We are immensely grateful that you're doing this. This is Steve. I have two questions, but they're related. This is the first I heard, if I understood you correctly, that in the, I think you called it the Whiskey Steakhouse video.
That's right.
That's actually used by the FBI, that the white backpack is only in a in that video? Why isn't it part of the moving video?
It is part of the moving video, but I'm merely saying that a still frame was taken from it.
And
published it. I got my first copy of it, as I said, from CNN the next day, the 19th of April, 2013.
All right. Thanks for clarifying that. That was a clarification question. My main question is, did I hear correctly that you need another attorney to help you substantively on this case or not?
We don't. I think, we've got the basic battle plan laid out. We're just going to do the same thing all over again, but we're going to bring up you know, we have to bring it up to date. We're going to have to talk about Zokar's bizarre sentencing statement.
All right.
Where
okay,
we
thank
need
you
the
for
help
thing.
Is with filing and you know, editing of work and make and you know, doing the kinds of what we all of the fancy footwork that you have to do to get your papers in final form, and it really
right.
takes a lawyer. And if there's a lawyer who can help, that would be great.
Okay, well, let me just say that I'm a member of the 9/11 Attorneys Working Group, and I will raise it at our next call on Sunday, and somebody may be getting back to you at your email about it.
Well, that would be terrific. That would be terrific. And by the way, you could have anybody wanted to call me. My number is 418-888-5049.
Okay.
Very
good.
That's an alternative. You can use phone or email.
All right. Thank you. That's it.
Thanks a lot.
Craig, you're next.
Yeah. Okay. I'm very anxious to hear what you think about the sentencing statement. Actually, and I was hoping somebody would ask that, but I had a different question about the backpack, which is something that you sort of focus on. I did a very in-depth article about this too, and I'm very interested to know. I know the backpack that Zokar had was a lighter color, and we've seen pictures of an exploded backpack. It's clearly
yeah.
black. Now, what I wanted to confirm with you is whether we know about both bomb sites, and whether, like, have we recovered both backpacks and they're both black, meaning that Zokar couldn't have been either of them, or have we just got one to go by? You know where I'm going with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, well, okay, that's a good question. We're helped by this because the indictment, if you look at the indictment, look at paragraph 7. Paragraph 6 and 7 are the key allegations in the indictment. That specifies that both backpacks were black.
Oh.
And that the bombs were concealed in both backpacks. So. And but the one you remember that one where they have a picture of the blown out backpack that has a little white triangle on it?
Yes.
Yeah.
That one was found a few feet from the mailbox in front of the Forum restaurant. And it is associated
right.
with the second explosion. That's also very clear from the indictment and from the exhibits. And if you read this in Merritt's pro se argument that I helped to write, we lay out the particulars in great detail. But that's the one that Zokar was supposed to be carrying. So it's beautiful. We've got
uh-huh.
that. It's beautiful. It's right there. It's in the indictment. The government has committed itself to that position on the basis of the FBI investigation. Their conclusions that were announced, I believe, on the 16th of April, 2013. So, you know, there's only one accused. That's Zokar. And the one that he was responsible for is that blown-out backpack. It's associated with the second explosion. It is found on the street a few feet from the mailbox in front of the Forum restaurant. And so that's why the still frame showing him carrying this flat white backpack is so critical and so important. The government itself... Go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you there. I just wanted to throw in this. I wondered if you knew about the video that is on YouTube that shows somebody coming up to it's a sort of an overhead across the street video, and it shows somebody, it appears to be a woman, setting a plastic bag down or a purse on top of a plastic bag about 2 feet from that mailbox. And then she sets down the purse, and then she walks away. And then, you know, you see the explosion, and you and it seems to have come from exactly the same spot. Did you know anything about that?
I would be greatly appreciative if you would send me an email on that.
Okay, will do.
If you would do that, it would help me. If you got any pictures or in a link or in an attachment, that would help. Just so I'm not exactly sure what you're saying, but I want
right.
to first I want to make sure what you're saying, and then
okay.
if you may have something new that I don't know about. But I
want
right. I want to get a closer look at what you're saying, and I think the best way for us to do that would be by email.
Okay, I'll definitely do that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Craig. Paul, you're next.
Yeah, I just have a question. This case reminds me of James Earl Ray's confession for assassinating Martin Luther King and then withdrawing it 3 days after he gets into the penitentiary.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you know anything about why he confessed and also during the sentencing why he apologized and he carried forward with that.
I don't know about a lot about James Earl Ray. I know about the case, of course, and I know Bill Pepper. You know, no doubt.
Yeah,
Bill,
right.
Bill Pepper. And that was one of the strange things about that case. It was the trial of the century when he was in Memphis, and the news media did a blackout on it. That was
right.
so obvious that the news media was acting for on implicit orders from on high. But I can tell you this about confession statements. Confessions are generally regarded as the weakest and most suspicious of all testimony in criminal cases. Because there there are many authorities for this, but I would recommend that you look at Blackstone's commentaries, I think in book 4, page 357, something like that. He says, it's the weakest and most suspicious of all testimony, and the law has worked very hard for many, many years, indeed ripening into centuries, trying to avoid false confession evidence. And most people think that, well, if he admits it, that is conclusive. But just the opposite is true. And you could have blackmail, you can have false hopes, currying for favors, artifice, duress, brainwashing, all kinds of things that can produce false admissions. That's with James Earl Ray. If you believe the evidence that Bill Pepper put in the court in Memphis, and I'm inclined to believe it. It was pretty convincing to me.
It was to me also.
Yeah, well, for a lot of us. And those who paid some attention to this, it's certainly how do you answer that? The confession statements have to be looked at with great care. So you can have someone plead guilty to a crime that he didn't commit. That happens all the time. I learned about this problem as a prosecutor. It's a real headache if you get the wrong person for a big crime, because that means that the guilty party is walking around free and is still a threat to public safety. So prosecutors have to be particularly careful against false confessions. And in this statement, this confession statement at the sentencing, first place, Zokar has never spoken that way about Islam or about Allah in his whole life in English or pressure. And I give you that. I know that from because I'm very close now to Merit Sarnaeva. She and I are very close. We talk quite often. I have I talked to her just a couple of days ago. I hadn't talked to her for about 2 months before that because she disappeared. She was being followed, and she just disappeared for a while. But I do know her quite well, and she told me that Zokar is he's just a kid. He's a 19, 20-year-old. He would say nothing is worthwhile unless it is done in the name of Allah. He doesn't talk that way. The Chechnyans are not that kind of hyper-pious, highly pious about their religion. They're very pragmatic about their Islam. They just happen to be under the Russian government, which is a Christian government, and at least it has been traditionally under the Orthodox Church, Russian Orthodox Church. And he just doesn't talk that way. He doesn't talk that way about anything. And it has all the marks of brainwashing. The reason why I know it is not false, cannot possibly be true, is that he was carrying a light, flat, white backpack. I don't need to know anything more than that. If once I see that, I know that any confession he gives, under any circumstances, has got to be false. And nor is it particularly unusual that someone might give a false confession.
We're running very short on time here, so I'd like to ask that we move on to the next question.
All right.
Thank you. Dave, Kat, Matt, and myself, please keep your comments very brief, and Dave, if you would, or I'm sorry, Jack, if you would, please keep your response very little.
All right.
Okay.
I'll try to do better.
Dave, go ahead.
I have six things that I'm going to, some of them I'm going to just raise with you privately afterwards because we've known each other a long time.
You've got less than a minute, Dave. Go ahead.
Yeah. You sent me a Merit's transcript. Can I have a way of sending that out to other people? Do you mind?
No, not at all. Public
okay.
Record.
And I'm curious whether I have been advised that the fellow who sat in the docket during the trial was not Zokar, that his friends who went to the trial said that's not him.
That's true. What weight you put on that evidence, I have no idea.
But I'll call. How late can I call you tonight?
Anytime after this.
Great.
Call me, you know, before maybe 10 or,
okay. Very good.
Or something like that, or 10 or 11.
Very good.
Would it be okay to put the transcript, to send it to Craig, to send to those of us on the call, Jack?
Sure. Would you like me to send my copies to you?
Just send it to Craig McKee.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How do I do that? Can I send it by email?
You can send it to
you
me.
You can, actually.
I'll get it to Craig. That's okay.
I was just going to say,
Craig.
Ken, I can save you a step just because I'm going to send you an email anyway. I was one of the people talking to you. So I was going to send you an email anyway. So that'll give you my address so you can send it back.
Okay, that's fine. And then what I'll do is just send you a full set of those papers with a few comments. It will be exactly as filed in the district court, except that it won't have Merit's signature in Russian script, which I have in my record.
All right.
Thank
you. Okay, Kat, you're next.
Hi, yes. He has been held incommunicado, so we really don't know anything about him. I'm even wondering about he was supposedly shot in the throat. Have you been able to see him? Has his aunt been able to see him? And why are you sort of late to the party? How come the aunt didn't bring this up before Judy Clark got involved?
I made an attempt to do that. There were some citizens who wanted me to see if I could get involved and raise a team of lawyers and so forth. They got to Zokar's parents before I, they had already made their choice before I could reach them. So that by the time I reached them through a British journalist who was a Russian speaking, who could speak Russian, they had already made their choice. It was already, if you look at Merritt's affidavit, she talks about the conversation in Mahachkala on the 20th and the 21st of June, 2013. I didn't get to them through the British journalists until after that meeting. And by that time, Zubidat already made the meet and her decision. That's one reason. I guess I'm not the only one that was asked to try to make this attempt. But if Merritt, I tried to get a hold of Merritt. She, at that time, she was in Toronto, but I was unable to get to her until, and she, by the time I did get to her, she was already back in Russia. So it was just a, and there is also another thing, the conversation that occurred in Mahachkala on the 20th and 21st of June. It's mentioned in, in Merritt's affidavit of the 17th of April, 2015. She says that the lawyers from the public defender's office said, look, if you hire an independent lawyer to work with us, we'll withdraw. And if you have an independent lawyer to take over, the government's going to give you a very hard time and obstruct your access to Zokar. Now, of course, that would be highly irregular if they did, but you can't put it past them. Keeping in mind that you're dealing with the FBI, which is a pretty tough group of guys. You have a lot of corruption in the FBI. And they might, if they have powerful enough players pulling the strings, they can make it very difficult for you. I think that they deliberately set this case up and they made it very difficult for anyone to get to Zokar precisely because they wanted to manipulate him. And we tried. I mean, I really did try to get to him either through myself or through some other lawyer, including Bill Pepper was consulted on this. And he was going to go see him. I tried to get to Zokar through his sisters in New Jersey, and I talked to their lawyer, Mario Blanche. And Mario called me up, and we had a talk, and he said, I can't, they don't want to talk to you. I said, well, Mario, I can read between the lines. I think I understand. You've got all you can handle in taking care of them. So there really were some very heavy political currents that complicated our attempts to get to Zokar in June of, or April and May and June of 2015.
Okay. Thank you. Just
a couple of comments about trends and entering the field of what I call legal quicksand and dealing with the Bureau. One case is the Leonard Peltier case, even though it's a different kind of case. It's a matter of what you're dealing with when you're dealing with the Bureau and they have a set agenda. The other is the case in Oklahoma City involving Timothy McVeigh. You might consider getting a hold of anyone that might still be around that was associated with the Oklahoma City Bombing Investigation Committee. They might be some assistance to you in dealing with the Bureau.
Okay. Anybody want to send me suggestions like you just made and the gentlewoman who just spoke before you? just send me an email, and I'll try to deal with it that way, too.
Okay.
That's very helpful. That's very helpful insight, you know. I've had my brushes with the FBI myself. I won't tell you about them. I have war stories I can tell, but we don't have time for that now.
No, we don't. Okay, so this is Ken. I'd just like to point out that in recent days, there's been a lot of mention of a petition supporting a new trial for SARNAP, and I don't know if that's connected with your effort or not, but I would suggest that you might want to consider that as a fundraising tool when you get to that point, just to do it in tandem with a petition drive, because a lot of people are drawn to that sort of approach.
I'll talk to my paralegal tomorrow morning about that. What they have, a motion, they have post-trial motions that these court-appointed lawyers are making, and these are just routine motions that will be made and denied, but they're used to set the case up for appeal.
Okay.
But I will do
Jack,
that.
Thank you. Jack, I want to thank you on behalf of the call for sharing time with us, for giving us such a detailed update. I'm sorry that nobody on the call was able to offer the fundraising support that you need at this point, but maybe word will get out through our minutes or whatever, and someone else will take up the...
I'm just asking if anybody, I didn't expect anybody at the meeting to come up and say, oh, sure, I'll do this. Just, if you can help, send me an email. Send it to me tomorrow morning.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Thank you again, Jeanette. Thank you for your time and for those wonderful updates.
All right, good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Is Kevin Barrett on the call? Kevin Barrett, 101. Well, I have to say for the record that this is the second time that Kevin Barrett has confirmed that he would be on the call and is not sure. So I guess we move on to our next item. The next item is Cheryl Curtis, who's going to update us on the group that's been critical of the HR14 website and what they're up to. Cheryl?
Okay. First of all, I've known Les for a long time, and when he started doing the 28 pages thing, I actually interviewed him on my radio show, and then I started looking into it and started to feel really uncomfortable with what was on the website and what they were doing. And I've been open in sharing emails with that group on, you know, on and off since February, and kind of got nowhere with it, but in looking at the website, the HR14.org, it really just regurgitates the official story of 9/11, and I don't think that serves our movement well, so I've been putting that out there. Nowhere does it mention that the joint inquiry was a cover-up from the start, and a lot of other issues. So finally, Ken had invited Les and I to be on the last month's call to discuss our differences on this. And we did, and, you know, we really didn't get anywhere, I didn't think. So I offered to start a new group and a new approach to the 28 pages, and I put that out there on the Internet and got 14 people interested in joining and being part of that. So we met, and we decided to first analyze the HR14 website and, you know, make sure that we were all on the same page and that it indeed wasn't, you know, was a regurgitation of the official story, and we felt that it was after analyzing the website. And so then we decided to write Les a letter and ask him to make some changes to the website, and we had specific points that we wanted him to change. And then we wanted it, you know, to be aligned with what we know in the 9/11 truth movement and not just, you know, be putting out the official story and, you know, going along with the idea that the hijackers were real and, you know, some of them aren't still alive and all of that was never mentioned. So, unfortunately, the draft letter, my fault, I accidentally released it to the larger 28 group thinking I was sending an email to our group. And it was a draft letter and it wasn't, you know, very polished. And people started to respond to it. So we, our group met again. We finished our real letter. And we sent that out last Tuesday evening.